Okay, so this is work I did with this cast of characters, one of whom is in the room, and I nod my head in the direction of people who have done similar things, and if you're in the room and your name does not appear in this list, then it should. I blame my co-conspirators. It's entirely my fault. And you should let me know. Okay, no big deal. Okay, so we all know this, everybody in the room is up to speed on dark matter, but since we just had the coffee break and our neuron coils start firing again, it's worth just showing you these two pictures, the different ways we have of looking for dark matter. You can tell by what's circled on this transparency who I stole it from, and apparently they were unaware of Wan's experiment, at least one of your experiments doesn't show up. So there are many, many ways we can try to distinguish signal from background when in a dark matter experiment. And one of the ways, the one I'll talk mostly about in this talk, is to, of course, use the fact that the signal from dark matter is hopefully modulating because of our motion around the sun and through the weak winds. So the purpose of this talk is to look for modulation in the data from Wan's experiment, from Kojic. So I'm a little nervous trying to describe Wan's experiment to himself. So I'll keep it as brief as possible. I'll give you the theorist, all the facts you need to know as a theorist about the experiment. It's both from germanium. There's about a third of a kilo of the stuff. It's absolutely brilliant because it has a very low threshold. And they took a bucket load of data from just before Christmas in 2009 until they were, or just before they were stopped by an unfortunate incident down the mine. They stopped taking data actually a week or so before this, but then of course couldn't start back up again because things were a little bit hotter down there than they were supposed to be. So this data set spans about 460 days. About 440 of it were actually live because they had to shut down for maintenance and such. And so the collaboration have set a great precedent in allowing people like myself to get their hands dirty on their data. They've offered us everything you need to know to analyze the data. So there's an enormous file filled with the timestamp data, the energy and the time of the events, and beautiful instructions on how to take into account all the backgrounds that they're aware of. And so with these data files and instructions, you can go and start to play, and you can make plots like this. You can start to look in the data itself, get your hands dirty, and check for modulation and other features. So this plot should be familiar to all of you. We saw it earlier today. The only difference is that I made this one, just to show you that they have given us everything we need. And you can even go and try to fit for modulation. So this is an attempt to fit for the higher part of the energy range, about 1.5 to 3 keV. And you can see where the shutdown periods were, especially this plot. So you can see there were three shutdowns during the run of the experiment, which accounts for the difference to the rotation. Because I will read the rest of the talk. Okay, so what was the approach we took to analyzing this data? So I'll give you a couple of transparencies on the statistical techniques we used. So like I said, they provided us not only with the almost raw data, but also with all the details about the known backgrounds. So the first thing you have to do is take into account all the cosmogenic backgrounds coming from various lines and such in crystals. And here you can see what the background looked like at the beginning of the experiment and at the just before the fire. So you see things that decay away with time. But you notice that most of the over the range of interest here, from about half to 3 keV, that most of the cosmogenic activity is below about 1.5 keV. So this above 1.5, you're pretty much in a safe region in terms of backgrounds, at least the cosmogenic backgrounds, but below 1.5 things can get a little bit interesting. So what you have to do is you have to somehow take into account the fact that these backgrounds are here, and then once you subtract it away in an appropriate way, you're left trying to fit the residuals to something like this to look for modulation. So what you try to do at the end of the day is just to fit the remaining data to a constant plus a modulating piece. And of course, the constant here doesn't just arise from the dark matter. It can be some unknown background that's constant in time. And depending on what we're doing with binning and energy, it may or may not be constant in energy. And we'll see as we go along the different hypotheses we use. And just to remind you, this T0 here is the phase. And for a normal Maxwell-Boltzmann model, or Halo model, I should say, the peak of the event rate happens about day 152. Where day zero is generally close. So that's somewhat close to June 2nd. Okay, so then we applied a whole suite of different techniques, all with fancy sounding names. But at the end of the day, you can take this data and you can decide that you want to just look at histograms, so you can pin it in energy and in time, or you can decide you want to get access to as much of the time information as you want. So you can bin in energy and not bin it in time, and then you use a likelihood approach. Or even if you have a hypothesis for what the signal might be, say a Maxwell-Boltzmann assumption for the halo or some mass for dark matter, or you want to find the mass that fits, you can do a completely unbinned analysis, so you don't bin in time or in energy, and then you get access to as much of the information as you can, and then you would try to maximize the likelihood over the mass and the cross-section such orbit. And if you wanted, you could also vary over the escape or something to try and find where the best fit point was. And when you do that, you have a nice fancy-looking equation. Or you can even use the Wronskadel approach, which is essentially a dressed-up Fourier transform that takes into account dead time in the experiment. So it doesn't mind if the data doesn't come in regular fashion, as real data doesn't. So you don't have to bin, or you don't have to bin in a regular fashion, and the long struggle period you can take that into account. So now, in the next few slides, I will just completely inundate you with beautiful plots, and we'll talk about each one and see if we can answer this question. So what is there in the data? So the first thing you can do is you can say, what's the best frequency to fit the modulation? So this is where this Wronskadel approach comes into its own. You can basically take the power spectrum and look for where the greatest power is and see if the modulation, if there is any, is really at the right frequency. Since if it was coming from dark matter, we know, since it's our motion around the sun, that the frequency should be an inverse year. And so here it is. Here is the power spectrum coming from this Wronskadel analysis. And you see a sizable peak here that corresponds to 1/1 year, and then you see some smaller subsidiary peaks. Now, the great thing about this Wronskadel approach is it allows you to, once you find the power at a particular frequency, this has statistical meaning. You can work out what the probability of the null hypothesis giving you that amount of power. So, if there was no modulation at all, if there was just a constant in time. Background, you could ask how likely is it to give you this amount of power at the inverse year, and you can see that with no look elsewhere effect, this is just a little bit over 3 sigma. So the background is unlikely to do this at this level. And I should have said, but I didn't, but I should have said this is using all of the events in energy from a half to about 3.1 kV.
But that's also showing that you're excluding white noise. Pretty significantly, right?
Excluding white noise.
Because, well, I mean, at the 90%, the fact that you have things going above your 90% means that you're excluding the fact that it's white noise.
If you say so, what do you mean?
Well, because the statistics come from asking what will the Wronskadel do for a white noise.
That's for yes, okay.
Right, so
that's
for white noise, how likely is it to get something as high as that?
Yeah, that's right.
And you're seeing
these substitutes.
Right, which right. For a white noise you will not see.
Right.
That's or with very local.
That's true. Right. Yeah, you say it would just be random.
Very much lower.
Yeah, very much lower, that's right. So I should have said, actually, if you include the look elsewhere effect, of course, because we looked at many frequencies at the whole point of
So I don't understand your comment. So 90%, if that's 90%, then 10% you should be up above that, and it looks like 10% you're above that. So
actually, this is again 90. This is what I was getting to. So 90% is for one frequency. If you just looked at one frequency, you said I just want to know what is the probability that it would have fluctuated at this frequency for a constant background. Then that would be 90%. Since we looked at many, many frequencies, of course, as you're saying, expect some of them to be above. Just because we look
at exactly. That's
so true. Since we looked at many, many frequencies, and I don't remember how many it was, this takes into account the number we looked for. So this is really the 90% since we looked at many.
So the blue line is...
Blue is the look at includes the look. Or you can, well, so this was looking over the whole range of energy, but you could say, oh, I don't, maybe there's some reason why I think one particular energy would be, or one range of energies is more likely to show modulation than the other. So if you have the back of your mind some dark matter model, you know that, at least for Maxwell-Boltzmann, most of the events tend to be at low energy. So this is an attempt to depict all of that. So what we imagine here is you start at, you look at all the events between the low energy and the high energy. So, for instance, this pixel here would be corresponding to looking from 1.5 to 2, say. And then you can ask, in that energy range, you can carry out the same analysis, except now we're just asking the question, what's the probability for, just looking at the inverse here frequency, so just looking at one frequency. And this is the p-value for the null hypothesis. So, you know, what you can basically see is it doesn't look like there's much modulation here at low energies, but the probability sort of goes up. Or rather, the probability of the null hypothesis goes down as you look at high energies. And this is something we'll see repeated again and again from the various techniques.
Are any of those other peaks statistically significant? Or?
Are any of these peaks?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you can work out exactly. This is the great thing. You just have to look up this. So basically, the probability for any one frequency for the background to fluctuate up to a certain power p is e to the minus p. For this monstrosity. So you can look at this and you can say this is power 4.
Yeah, we say if they are, then it would be nice to try and figure out
right.
You know, what's the period of 2 days or.
Well, here's the period here. So there looks like there's a little bit more power at sort of 18 days or something, and here maybe at 1300 days. Inverse 13, 2.5. Okay, so make it that way you go.
From this plot, it looks, if you had chosen E high and E low to land in that one little isolated white dot.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, it seems like it's suggesting you could be fooled, you know, because that must be sort of spurious. In some
it's probably spurious, that's right. Yeah.
Which, you mean the fact that at 1.5 and 2?
There, or then, just but then if you just change E high a little bit, then suddenly the probability of the null hypothesis goes way up again, so.
That could just be that you have modulation which is localized.
Right.
Localized in energy.
In energy.
Yeah.
You should also keep in mind the counting rates you're dealing with.
Oh, so I should have said, yes. Yeah, so
it's a very small number.
No, but we took that into account when we did this. So we, what we actually did was, because this is a binned analysis, we binned in time, and any time we had two few events in time, we would actually merge bins. But Lomskargl can take that into account. So we always required that there were enough events in the ultimate bins. So we bin fairly finely and we scan through and ask, are there enough for this approach to be valid? And if there weren't, we would merge neighboring bins until we got them. So I think this is a fair, the statistical interpretation is well defined. How we interpret the statistics is probably less well defined. But the, okay, so that was looking for a frequency. It looks fairly convincing that if there is modulation, that it is an inverse year. At least that's the favored, certainly the highest peak in this plot. Okay, so with that in mind, I'm now going to fix the frequency to being an inverse year, and I'm going to ask questions like what is the phase and what is the amplitude of this modulation. So again, I'll do it, first of all, in a binned analysis, both binned in energy and binned in time. So here are two energy bins, slightly complementary to the ones when I serviced this morning. Here's one, the low half. Remember, the peak of the cosmogenic background goes away at about 1.5, which is why we picked this boundary. So here you're somewhat away from any radioactive backgrounds in here. And then I'll take two different. In one case, I'll let the phase float, so the data will pick out the best phase by minimizing the chi squared. In the other case, I'll fix the phase as well as the frequency. So in both, I fix the frequency, but in this one, I'll fix the phase to being what we expect from Maxwell-Boltzmann, and then I'll just try to fit the data. And the red is for the free phase, and the blue is for the fixed phase. And here's the result. So you see that there's some. So this, I should have said, I don't know if you remember, this will be the modulating fraction, not the modulation amplitude, but just the fraction. So that's 14%, 18%, and so on. And what you notice from looking at this, again, what I alluded to in the previous transparency, is the difference from a constant in time is largest in the highest spin.
Is it delta chi squared per degree of freedom, or does
delta chi squared? Square. So there's one more degree of freedom in these two, in this row, and in this row. It's just delta chi squared.
So So which
you have to,
if you divide by that, if you're freedom, which one is higher?
Let's see. So here there's one, right? Two rather, and here there's two. We fix the frequency, we fix the phase. And
wait, I don't think you want the delta chi squared per degree of freedom, right? Why?
This is just delta chi squared.
You want delta chi squared minus degrees of freedom, right?
No, he wants a per degree of freedom.
Well, usually you talk about chi squared per degree of freedom.
Oh, sorry, you're right. It's chi squared per degree of freedom.
But you want to know how much do you improve the chi squared by adding one degree of freedom, and you improve it by three.
You should go read the paper for that. This is enormous transparency, and I don't have a head for numbers. Okay, so now we can do the same thing again, but using fancier mathematics. So the previous one was entirely binned in energy and binned in time. In this case, we're going to bin it in energy, in these different bins, and then so the same two bins as before, and then everything. And we won't bin in time at all, so we'll apply this likelihood approach and allow us to keep as much information in the time domain as possible. And these are the results. So again, you see that there's a preference for more modulation in the higher bin than the lower bin, and the significance of this modulation is larger since these the sigma contours are, the 90% contours are further away from zero. So the fact that the modulation is slightly higher, and also that it's significantly separated from zero, is clearly happening more so in the higher bin. And I should remind you that for the accuracy of Keynote, this is where phase would be for a standard Hilbert model. So you also see that the phase that S fits, which was probably obvious from the previous transparency as well, is a little bit separated from what you'd expect for a Hilbert model. That's
the whole question or a stretch?
No, it's a stretch.
Maybe have a question.
Would be where?
I'll keep my eye on you. Okay. And even more cool pictures. So again, this is the same format as before. Rather than binning so coarsely as in this transparency, we can bin a little bit more finely. Well, you can pick whatever bin you want. I think the smallest binning we took was a difference of 0.1 or 0.2, I don't remember that number, between the low and the high. So if there's lots of plots here, so you should, that wasn't supposed to happen. There we go. For each plot, the thing in the red square is the approach we use. So these ones up here are, again, letting the phase float. This one is fixed to the Maxwellian phase. This column is a binned approach. This is an unbinned approach. And you can basically see that, that they are consistent with one another, first of all, which is reassuring. And secondly, that you notice that the p-value of the null hypothesis is most... The data is most discrepant with the null hypothesis, the no modulation hypothesis, when you go to high energy. So if you stick down here, you see that it's between 0.1 and 1. Once you get up to here, you get into numbers of 1% or so.
But it seems you also have to keep E low pretty small. Like if you just go to a high E low.
That's true, yes. But there's also clearly some sort of line here, which is a bit weird. But yeah, that's right. So you need to, maybe it's once you include all of the data, but it certainly doesn't happen until you include the second half of the data. The second half in hand. Okay, so now we can ask a little bit more detailed questions. We can ask, what did the shape of the modulation look like as a function of energy? Since we can bin it up in energy and fit each range of energy. So we decided to split the range from 0.5 to 3 into the following four bins. You can see why, obviously. The first two are sitting under these peaks, and we split the region where there shouldn't be much activity into two different bins. Once we've done that, this is what we get. So this is the best fit for the constant piece of this modulation, if that makes sense. This is the modulation amplitude. So in the notation I used earlier, it's the product of A0 and A1. So this is now not the fraction, but the actual amplitude in the units. And this is the best fit phase. So here you can see from the color scheme what we mean by these different colors in the other plots. So this, we tried three different hypotheses. One where you fix the phase from the outset to being 152 days. Another one where you find the best fit phase over the whole energy range, and you fit it to be that in all these smaller bins. And that's the green, or whatever color that is on the screen. And then the final possibility is bin by bin, you just have to face load, which, of course, wouldn't happen from some dark matter or this, but at least you can ask the question.
So, can I
ask
a question? A-not, if you put it at different years, is it the same, or...?
Different years? They only have 15 months of data. It's current. Putting them at different years.
So how do you get modulation if you have only 15? I'm a bit confused. So how can you do Fourier transforming if you have only 15?
One more than one period.
You just get one period?
You
have a little bit more than one period, that's right. See, we only we never looked at frequencies, periods longer than a year when we get the frequency.
But then, so I'm a bit confused because then your variance limited. I mean, same way that like in CMB you cannot measure quadrupole if you just have one mode, then your error is order one. So I'm a bit confused how you could.
I think that you can, with the CMB, you can still measure it. It's just that you don't have a statistical sample to know what the predicted value was, right?
Exactly.
So there's some. The CMB, you have a spread, and you sample that spread.
I mean, if you just have one mode, then your error is 100%.
If you imagine that you're drawing that mode from the statistical ensemble, in this case, you believe there's an actual value, right?
Okay.
And you're measuring that value.
I see. So, yeah, I think you're out of time.
One more comment to what you just said was, so I think you can, with a sufficient velocity substructure, have peak phase modulations that depends on energy. It's not necessary.
Ah, that's true. With amount, yes, sorry, I was thinking in the back of my mind, just a simple maximal velocity. No, you're right. You're exactly right. Okay, so there it is what it is, and so you can stare at this for a moment, and again, you see what I keep saying is that here, yes, there is does appear to be some modulation amplitude, but the error bars are fairly large, and 2 sigma are consistent with 0, and slightly less consistent than higher. Hopefully you can remember this color scheme for the rest of the talk, because I think it showed up again and again, and I'm not sure if I remember to label all the slides. And if you can't remember, please remind me. Okay. So we can summarize what we saw from the data. There is modulation, and depending on exactly what you assume about the phase, it can be anywhere from 2 to 3 sigma, depending on how much of the energy range. As I keep saying, the most significant amount of modulation seems to be at high recoil energy, where it's approximately 15 to 20% modulation fraction. The best fit phase over the whole data is 106 days, and so it's a little bit discrepant with the as you can see. So this is the green again was the best fit over all of the data, and you can see the distance away from the Maxwell Boltzmann phase. So sort of the bottom line conclusion, the zeroth order conclusion is this is again what Wyman was saying this morning. It doesn't appear to be consistent. With a simple Maxwell-Boltzmann elastic scattering. So with that in mind, we can ask this question. So that's what it seems to be saying, but we should try to fit Maxwell-Boltzmann into the day and see how unpleasant that is. So what we did is now we, rather than just looking at the data and trying to extract all of the modulation parameters from the data without thinking about dark matter, now we have some hypothesis for what the dark matter contribution to the modulation would be. So we assume something like this for the Maxwell-Boltzmann distribution with some fairly standard choice of parameters for the distribution. And then we try to fit various hypotheses. So here's a table with all the different choices we tried. So we tried fitting all of the data at once, so just everything in energy and time. We tried it. This column is if we used a bin approach, binned in energy. And this is if we didn't bin in energy at all and we just used a full likelihood approach, because now we have an idea as to what the prediction from what the shape as a function of energy would be of the modulation. So we can just run it through this likelihood approach. Then we tried fitting just the spectrum, which is to say we removed all time information and just looked at the shape of the distribution and energy of the events. Then you can do the complement to that. You can look at just the distribution in time, so just look at the modulation. And we tried this under two So the, everything from here on out was a binned analysis, binned in various ways. And so we binned this in 5 bins in energy, and I don't remember how many bins in time. And we allowed ourselves to have a constant in time contribution in each energy bins, and that contribution could be different. So that basically mocks up the idea of there being a an exponential background in addition to any other flat background, because we allow these constants to be different. Then we also imagined that these constants could be negative, which is a bit unphysical, but allows you to see just what the modulation purely by itself is telling you about dark, about the best fit dark matter parameters. And then we also tried to feel north on the paper. We tried IBM as well. So, and there you can see the output. So I guess the interesting two rows are this one and this one, where you can see the best fit cross-section and the best fit mass under all these various hypotheses. And you can see how well, this is now chi-squared, not delta chi-squared, how well they do in each case. And you should compare that to null hypothesis, which is to say a flat in time contribution.
So how many degrees of freedom, where is the...
The top line is the degrees of freedom for each of these hypotheses.
That's a lot. I mean, and then the number of parameters that you're fitting for, that's fewer, right?
Oh, a lot fewer. There's just a mass, a cross-section, in this case 5 constants, in the other case 1 constant.
Okay. So if the difference is bigger than the number of parameters, then it's good. Then
that's
it's
right.
Significant.
That's right. So the point is that it's not that much better. Okay. Once you throw in... So it was 5 in energy, like I said, and allowing the constant to be different in each energy bin ends up with this, and then adding in a dark matter contribution ends up with this. And so for IBM, for instance, you've actually added 3 parameters. In these ones, you've added 2, and you can see how much the improvement is. So there is an improvement, but it's not a standard. Okay, so then you can... Then you can take those best fit parameters and just see what they look like. See if you're really convinced by the statistics, and this is what you get. Here is, so the elastic is the solid line, and the inelastic is the dashed line. So you see the inelastic, as you might expect, does a better job of fitting the modulation that appears to be at high energies, since it favors the cause of that. And here is, because Joachim was one of the authors of the paper, we're obligated to make this type of plot. And so there it is. So you can see under those various assumptions from the previous transparency where you land in the M signal plane. So this is the full likelihood analysis, which actually agrees very well with the DIN version as well. When you take into account all data, in where it's distributed in energy and in time, this is the favored region. Here is the Dharma region. To normalize yourself. And then if you just look at the modulation and allow there to be negative backgrounds just so you can focus entirely on the modulation, this is the best point. If you instead insist that any additional constant contribution has to be positive, you find that you don't get an enclosed region, you get just that. And you might imagine, since the fit wasn't at this confidence level, because the fit wasn't terrible if I just threw away dark matter completely. So, of course, going down this way isn't really that bad of a hit. Okay, and then as we heard recently from Germany, and again this morning, maybe everything I'm telling you is subject to, should be revisited, in light of the fact that there are some updates from Cogent in the way they separate background and signal surface and bulk events. And I don't know whether this is a factor of 4 ruled out now, or just a factor of 100 tension. As Neil said on Monday, or Monday, I don't know what the date was.
Yesterday.
Yes. Or was it tomorrow? I get confused after all.
That's because signals are thousands of miles.
Yeah, that's right. I get very confused.
Yeah,
they
caught that in this process. Yeah.
So, there is this effect that now they can better discriminate surface from bulk events. But you notice this effect seems to be a small correction above about 1.5, and a somewhat larger correction below 1.5. So at least this fact that there appears to be more modulation at high energies than low energies, that will probably not be subject to that much change. But exactly what's going on at low energies, for when they release the new data, we'll be able to, we'll be in a good situation to reanalyze it using the techniques I've just described and then see what we get at. But again, so this update is a preliminary.
It will not change much, the correction factor. We're going to find a couple of.
But of course, it changes. I mean, which ones get affected? I need the new data with the timestamps, presumably, to do the modulation.
Well, remember that you cannot do this event by event. I mean, that's a correction factor that.
I thought from the pulse shape you could do some sort of
event. No,
event.
This is an a posteriori look at what is it that you left behind us, but on an event by event.
So in this case, it could. I mean,
it's similar to what sodium iodine crystals can do at low energies. They can apply an overall correction and try to tell you, well, most probably these are electron records and nuclear records, but on an event by event basis, you cannot identify one from the other.
So you don't know as a function of time how to apply this correction?
Exactly, no.
So then I can't repeat the analysis. So,
well, you could, in a sense. We can talk about this later. One of our students, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah, so I thought there was a possibility from the rise time that you could, an event by event, give me some sort of problem.
That's already been done. That's with a 90% bulk acceptance, that's already done in that spectrum.
In the black spectrum?
And that's now an estimation of what is the contamination that you left behind in the form of surface events, but you cannot apply it on an event.
So the rise time thing is in the data we already have?
That's already after the black dots are after the.
So then I guess it's still an open question as to what happens once it's applied as a function of time.
As a function of time, you won't be able to.
Okay, so given that we seem to be led down this path.
But you couldn't bin it and then do the distribution at different times? Like, couldn't you?
You would have to wait for a much longer exposure.
Yeah, your acceptance would, or your statistics would be crappy.
Very, very crappy.
But in principle, you could probably do some gigantic likelihood analysis, right?
Yeah, but you like doing those things that I kind of cringe.
Give us
the data. We'll do that for you.
You will keep getting the data. It's a free country.
Wish everybody felt that way.
Canada? We're in Canada right now.
That's right. It's a free country. Okay, so we seem to be led down this path that the modulation, there is some modulation there, but it doesn't seem to fit or mesh perfectly with the usual Maxwell-Boltzmann, so then we can start asking, what about other Halo models? And Neil talked about this yesterday, so I can, how much time? 5 minutes, so I will be brief. So the point is that once you tell me, or once you have an idea as to how the velocity is distributed, or dark matter velocity is distributed in our vicinity, I can predict for any given choice of a scattering cross section of the dark matter and its mass, I can predict what rate you would see in your experiment. There is some prefactor that is determined by the stuff you're scattering off, so by this experiment specific, and then there's a piece that's astrophysics and dark matter specific. So this just depends. This is now independent of the target, and we know exactly how to relate the minimum velocity that's involved here to in the elastic case, and also in the inelastic case, to the recoil energy. So the recoil energy uniquely determines the minimum velocity we have to scatter. So you can, as Neil said, it took me a long weekend to figure this out, but you can use algebra to invert this equation, and you can solve for the thing in green, which is now target independent. So if you have at least two experiments, you can solve for the thing in green at one experiment and then make a prediction at another experiment for the left-hand side using the thing in green. And so I know that's a complicated step. That's why it's written out here on the slide then on several steps. And all you end up with is you end up with some awful-looking expression which basically allows you to map any rate you see at some experiment into a rate you should see at another experiment. And everything's just entirely determined by what the target is and your hypothesis for the dark matter mass. Okay, so we can do that. And just to demonstrate the power and utility of this approach, I stupidly picked the case where you don't need it as my first transparency. I picked what would happen if I tried to compare what Cogent sees to what CDMS sees, and of course they have the same target, so as Ryan pointed out, this is so straightforward you don't need any algebra. And the best thing to do is to compare the spectra. So what we have here is we have what we found for these two different hypotheses from the data. This is the modulation amplitude as a function of energy. So again, one was a Maxwell-Boltzmann choice, one was the best fit overall of the data. And then red in here is the 90% confidence upper limit from CDMS that we've extracted from across all of the data. And so what you see from this is there doesn't appear to be any tension. After all, within the error bars, all of the cogent points fall below the CDMS band, so that looks okay. But what it does imply is that the amount of modulation at CDMS should be large, because what I've shown here in the blue and green is just the modulation amplitude, not the overall rate, just the modulation amplitude. And so, but this band is on the overall rate. So you can see that the modulation fraction would be large at CDMS, so it would be nice if they put out their modulation amounts. And we believe they're doing this, but they're not running silent mode. So now, moving on from the simple case of comparing germanium to germanium, you can try to compare oxygen to germanium, or rather germanium to oxygen, or germanium to xenon. And then you have to use this fancy algebra technique. And what it allows you to do is to map the energy range from cogent into an energy range at crest under the assumption that it's scattering entirely off oxygen and the dark matter is 7 GeV. So, of course, these numbers change slightly once you change this mass, but this is good enough for this talk. So this is the range of energy. You go to a crest, and you see that at least the lower range of cogent falls below many of the thresholds of the detectors. Whereas the upper range doesn't. And so you can compare the prediction. So cogent would predict about 11 events at crest, and they have around 30, so there's not any tension there. This is 11 modulating events. You can do the same thing at xenon. And as we heard this morning, it's all about L-effective. So this is the mapping of the energies between the two, an example of the mapping. So if the L-effective at this energy was what it has been measured to be, which is about 0.07, then you would predict in the last two bins from cogent, you would predict at xenon 15 up and around 30 events. So that seems to be a problem. But of course, once L-effective drops below this value, tension goes away. So it's all about what L-effective is. Is it really what it's been measured to be, or is it something smaller? Finally, we can compare the two experiments that look for modulation to each other. We can compare cogent to Dharma. The black and the gray points in these plots are the many bin and two bin analysis by Dharma, and the blue and the green are those two different hypotheses from cogent. And so we're now comparing modulation to modulation, not modulation to rate or anything like that. And you can see for various choices of quench factor of sodium for various dark matter masses, you either seem to have interesting agreement or somewhat tension between, so this is for the canonical 0.3, this is for 0.5. During your talk, I did 0.1.
You just did it while I was...
I did it, yeah. So I'm sorry if I didn't look like I was paying attention, but I really was. because you see, I had to check the number. And then here it is for 0.2 and 8 numbers. Just numbers, I think. So here it's a fairly good agreement. Here it looks like it's no longer in good agreement with Dharma. So you can play this game. And nicely leads me to my conclusions. There does appear to be something going on at sort of the 2-3 sigma level in cogent, but certainly this modulation is from dark matter. It's not from dark matter distributed in a Maxwell-Boltzmann halo. And since we know it's not a Maxwell-Boltzmann halo, we really ought to do the comparison between experiments in a way that doesn't go by the sigma m plot, in a way that's independent of the halo model as much as possible. So that's, I think, the way we should do these comparisons in the future. So that's my conclusions about cogent, and my conclusions sort of across the whole dark matter field, the global conclusions, there they are. But there is there's one redeeming feature. At least as far as I know, dark matter isn't really fast. So that's good. Thank you. Don't worry, he's just stretching.
So many say it's not not max for Boltzmann, was that based on the phase, or was it something?
It's based on partially on the phase and the distribution in energy, where the modulation is largest.
But the phase was within like 2 sigma.
Yeah, it was within 2 sigma. That's right.
That's right. And, but the other thing was the stretching energy. That
Yeah. So the fact that the modulation was larger, more significant to high energy than room, which is not what you expect.
Can you attach a sigma to that or?
Depends how you want to define it. So you're asking.
So you're saying it's not Maxwell-Boltzmann. So I'm saying at what significance is that Maxwell-Boltzmann?
I don't think. So I think we could probably answer that question for a particular V escape in V zero. But of course, I don't think.
But you can exclude it at 90%, right? Because if you assume that you get you're off by 2 sigma, so that's like 90%. So you can exclude that by with that confidence.
Is that right? You're off by 2 sigma if you assume Maxwell-Boltzmann?
I don't know if we're off by 2 sigma.
Yeah.
I don't know. That'll be
can you look at what the improvement was?
Yeah, that's the way to do it. This one here.
So what numbers should I compare?
So you should be comparing... Oh, it's not there. Sorry. So the improvement of adding a Maxwell-Boltzmann... Elastic scattering Maxwell-Boltzmann dark matter is this compared to this, right? You've got two extra.
That's not improvement. There's one.
So actually, maybe we should compare it to. Oh, no, that's the one.
And now, hypothesis is no modulation? Or?
Yeah, no modulation, but I do allow the background to be energy dependent. That's why there's an extended degree of
I'm still not following. So there is no improvement?
There's only margin, it's a very small improvement. Yeah.
And with the correction for the surface events, the tension is even larger. I mean, it's,
of course,
you would have to have a Maxwellian halo cannot give you a plus minus 50% or 40% correlation. It's a big tension.
I guess Mariangela's plot would have done this as well, but I didn't put that in. Yeah, there's a plot in the paper that may also. Yes.
So if you make if you change the parameters in the Maxwellian distribution, you can get a different.
It never improves it by much. There is a plot in the paper where we scan.
If you make the V0 smaller, you can get larger modulation.
I think you want to make the V escape that has the largest effect. Not V
naught. V naught also have a lot.
V naught, but I think V naught is somewhat degenerate of changing things like cross section. I think.
Yes, you need to change the cross section to make the cross.
But I think V escape is really because when you get all your modulations from living out on the tail, right? So if you can bring the tail closer or you bring yourself closer to the tail.
Yes, but you know the distribution is like this.
Sure.
So if you the distribution is coming from the velocity of the Earth, so. If the it's a very small range. If that range goes different, that range is at the, I mean at the region where the distribution changes very sharply, and then you can get a large modulation.
Yes. So the place where it's changing most, if you add in the plus minus 30 of the Earth, is right out of the tail. So you want to move yourself. You want to move the end of your distribution close to.
Yes.
So move yourself close to the end of the
but even then, it's very hard to get that modulation to be large over an appreciable energy range, right? Because now you're limiting yourself to an energy range that corresponds to really the very end of your velocity distribution. And now if you're saying that it's like order one modulation over, you know, this amount of energy.
Right. So
that's tough.
But also, it's hard to get, you know, you're looking at sizable 10-15% modulations and larger up here than in there. It's tough to do.
I'm confused. So the modulation fraction actually increases with
U. Yeah, you should never think about the modulation fraction.
But that's what you're talking about there. A1 is the fraction.
Yeah, so what you should do in your head, and I just did it this way, is to put it on one transverse, is multiply these two things together.
And then the modulation decreases as you. But that's driven because the overall rate
is. The overall rate, that's right.
So, yeah.
Okay, so since we are running a little late, maybe that's going to stick on the once again.